that was how I got into this general topic. And then it was approached by the American Academy of Pediatrics, which also was had a Mexican component in the late 70s. And we did a project on maternal and child health on the U.S.-Mexican border. And then about every 3 or 4 years, I've done something that's been related. Generally, I think about 20 years ago, I decided that I thought the big issue here was how do you integrate the healthcare systems of the U.S. and Mexico. And I must say, we've still got quite a ways to go. So since then, the first time we looked at this Medicare in Mexico was back in, and got people riled up was in 1990, I think. And we put out a project then, and then put out another one in on NAFTA and healthcare in 95. And I know Miguel Angel and I presented in Albuquerque around that period. And then again, we did a project in 98, 99 on Medicare in Mexico. And I did a cross-border healthcare project in 2003. And then we did this project on Medicare in Mexico that I'm going to talk about today. And actually, I want to talk about it a little more broadly, talk also about comparing the U.S. Mexican arrangements to the EU arrangements, and maybe a little bit about the kinds of developments that have taken place in the EU and how that might relate. So basically, what we have is a whole new world today, unlike anything we've ever had before. In other words, right now, you've got about 200 million people living outside the country they were born in. And certainly more than 10 million, and by Mexicans, I mean people born in Mexico who currently live in the U.S. We'll use the 11 million number. I suspect today it's even more. I don't think it's, maybe it's 15 million. I don't think it's more than that, but it's a lot. And many of them have American citizen kids and or spouses. And a number of American citizens live in Mexico. But you also have, actually, I think the estimate is something like 5 or 6 million Turkish citizens live in Germany. Now, Turkey's different. I mean, Germany's different because you actually, even if you're born in Germany, you're still Turkish from the Germans' point of view. So you have third and fourth generation Turks who've never lived in Turkey, who are still considered Turkish nationals from the point of view of Germany. Same thing with North Africa and France. And in Europe, increasingly, people are living in the south of Europe. So basically, I want to talk a little bit about the things I said I was going to talk about. Oh, did I already do that? Okay. And you've got a growing number of elderly. In the U.S. currently, you've got something like 31 million between 55 and 64, and more than that, who are more like about 37 million or 65 plus. Europe is older, and so just for the four biggest countries, you've got about 45 million people who are over 65, and those countries together have less population than the U.S. does. Japan is very old. It's got about over 26 million, 65 plus. And then China has all kinds, and down the road will have an enormous number. Okay. And the health and social services costs of the elderly are very high. In the U.S., you have, it's about $7,000. Am I going the wrong way? Yeah, okay. Yeah, there. More than $7,000 per capita. For the over 65 population, it's more than $15,000 per capita annually. And if you include some of the other social services, it's more. Now, there's some evidence that it doesn't kind of, it's not as soon as you turn 65, it's really, it kind of goes up in your last years of life, it's more expensive. The Europeans seem to spend less on the elderly than we do in the U.S. But at the same time, you seem to have a growing number of people choosing to retire abroad. One, because you can maintain a higher lifestyle or the same lifestyle with less money. And that ranges from people who want to go back to the town in Jalisco that they were born in to live in a house they inherited, or that they set money back for $500 a month and can live extremely well compared to the way they would live in the U.S. on their Social Security. And but it's also people that I talked to somebody whose husband had had a mild heart attack. They're in their early 60s. They decided to sell their house in Austin, move to Chapala. They made about $300,000 on the sale of the house. They bought a house in Chapala for half as much. Instead of paying $16,000 a year in property taxes in the U.S., they pay $50 a year in Mexico. And instead of spending $4,000 or $5,000 a year on cooling and heating, they spend well under $1,000 in a place like Chapala. So you can see how you kind of have, and there are a lot of strong economic reasons. And then also, but the problem is that if you don't have portable health coverage, you're a little afraid to go. In other words, one of the biggest concerns of the people we talked to were mostly American-born retirees in Mexico, was that they would have some severe incident. They'd want to go to a fancy hospital in Guadalajara, but were afraid that it would cost them $100,000, and they didn't have the insurance. And it's very difficult in Mexico to buy private health insurance when you're above a certain age. I've heard 55, 60, certainly 65. And even if you can, then you have pre-existing conditions that are generally not covered. Now, many people have a strategy of buying into EAMS, not to use it as primary care, but rather as a figuring that they get some connections so that if they do have something very serious, they'll be taken to a good tertiary hospital in Guadalajara. And they think of using the EAMS that way. So there are strategies out there. Now, the other population, the Mexican-born population, there's two problems with going back to Mexico. One is this fact that they have Medicare. They've worked up here for many years. We're talking about citizens and permanent residents. But for permanent residents, if you don't come back to the States within 6 months, you can lose your permanent residency status, and you lose your rights to Medicare. And many people who immigrate here as adults never learn English, and that really is the deal killer for them on becoming citizens. And so there's an unknown population out there who do live a substantial amount of time in Mexico, and for whom Medicare coverage would be very, very attractive. And I think many more people would retire to Mexico if they had that coverage. At both Mexican origin population and have we seen that already? Yeah. The problem with Medicare is it doesn't pay. The only services abroad it pays for is if you have a severe accident on the border, the closest place is right across the border. Or if you're driving to Alaska on the Alcan Highway and have an automobile accident or a heart attack, it'll pay for one hospital, your hospital coverage there in case of emergency, but that's it. Now, some of the Medicare Advantage plans do basically provide the same thing which the more expensive Medigap plans do, which is, if within 60 days of leaving the country you have an emergency, then the emergency is covered abroad. And so some people kind of either move back and forth or may misrepresent how long they've been in Mexico. And there were some kind of fraudsters who were signing up Mexican doctors from America, who were signing up Mexican doctors and hospitals to contracts, and then basically selling residents of Chapala and the Dominican Republic and some other places, these 1 week, timeshares. in San Diego and then selling them advantage plans based on the timeshares. But it's definite, that would definitely not be legit. Now, in the EU, basically in the EU, the deal is if you're traveling abroad, you have an EU health card, and you can present it and get your care covered if it's an emergency. If you work for somebody in another EU country, then you basically are covered under that national health plan, although occasionally if you're working for a company from your own country, in that other country you'd still be covered back, but you're covered. And retirees have the option of moving their coverage from the country they're from to the country they're living in. All of these things are handled. Now, this does not amount to covering medical tourism or saying just because you live in England, you can get the best heart transplant anywhere in Europe. There are, however, some new standards even there which say that if your national health plan covers something, if you can't get it promptly, you are entitled to go somewhere else. I'm not going to go into the General Agreement on Trade and Services. I could go at some length into this. Basically, we're talking about mode two here when we're talking about the customer going across. A problem, really, though, with health is that it's been very slow to have very significant things. Some countries open up their trade in health for hospital care, for instance, but it's pretty limited. The difference, though, is with GATS, the country has to open up care in the direction, they have to take the initiative. So you have to say, we're going to open up something and you're going to either be treated, it's either going to be most favored nation or people are going to be treated as if they were from our country. In NAFTA, everything was presumed to be free trade unless you had entered restrictions. And on health, both the Canadians, the Mexicans, and the U.S. entered a lot of restrictions which still exist. So I went through what the EU did, and basically one of the problems the EU has had is that in Sweden and Britain, you basically have no payment at point of service. Everybody who's a resident in the country is entitled. They're not used to processing bills. And so if somebody goes to Spain, the question is, who do they bill? So essentially those countries have worked out deals where they pay so much for each retiree in Spain or in Italy, although it's very ad hoc. The other countries, basically the insurance plans, in many cases, have developed relationships with individual provider groups in those countries in which they cover it. The portability, however, in the EU doesn't transfer to these non-EU countries, but some have developed bilateral arrangements. Spain's got a deal with Brazil, Ecuador, Chile, Peru, and Paraguay, where everything's not covered, but emergencies when people are visiting are covered in the other country. France and Algeria actually have an agreement that covers workers from Algeria who've worked in France. France then will cover them when they retire back to Algeria. And there's some reciprocal aspect of that as well. Okay. U.S. and Mexico, we've put out a number of these studies. If anybody wants one of these, they can have it. And what we're trying to do is to do a research and demonstration project where you waive some of the restrictions on Medicare paying in Mexico for retirees. And also, it seems to me, or at least to encourage Congress to approve something, it seems to me that Medicaid would also, it would be interesting if somebody who was eligible for Medicaid and had retired to Mexico and would otherwise be coming back for a nursing home, if you could be paying a quarter as much, maybe half of the federal match, to cover long-term care services in Mexico. They're a lot cheaper and more attractive home and community-based options in Mexico than there are in the U.S. And I don't think it's going to be a while before Congress says, if you have Medicare, you can go to Mexico and pick the provider you want. but I think a strong case can be made for retirees. And especially, I think, there's a big push now internationally worried about the diaspora and how do you handle return migration. And it seems to me that Medicare, especially for people who've worked many years and established their right to the benefit, is an important piece to the puzzle.
The third speaker, as I pointed out earlier, is kind of grown up with CPAC over the years.
Okay.
Has now become a professor at the School of Public Health at UCLA. He came to us first, having previously worked in with the Mexican Health Ministry, having worked in the insurance arena, if you will, in Mexico. And so he came to us with that interest, and we had a commonality of interest, and he's worked on a series of projects since then. The paper he's going to be reporting on today is a paper he did in conjunction with myself, as well as Xochitl Castañeda, who's the director for the Health Initiative of the Americas. And it was a project that we had an opportunity to do, and CPAC provided some direct support, as well as the Health Initiative of the Americas. And we had hoped at one point that the Mexican government, Mexican Health Ministry, was going to do a complement to the study. They haven't yet done so, and I think Arturo's will report on this piece. This piece was published actually early this year, in January, in the Journal of Health Affairs. Thank you.